This talk was given by Michael Yukon Grody at the Zen Center of New York City. Yukon is a senior monastic in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation, please visit our website at zmm.mro.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
Good morning. Coming out in the rain like this, you crazy New Yorkers, you. You know, I thought I'd be talking to myself again. I do that enough, I think. This is fun. Thank you. Thank you for coming out today. The Sesshin is going on up at the monastery, the last Sesshin of Ango. Ango is the 3-month intensive training period, and it's Chuso Hosen, which means that the most junior of the senior students is becoming a senior student and going through a process of 3 months of intensive practice and giving his first talk and then having the Sangha challenge him on his understanding. His name is Rakesan. He's been in the Dharma since early 70s and studied with Sasaki Roshi for years and was a monk with him, and then left that life, got married, had a child, went through all these changes, and he's ended up as a monastic living there singly. And I'm very excited for him. He's a great old boy. The qualities of a true friend. A friend gives what is hard to give and does what is hard to do. Forgives you your harsh words and endures what is hard to endure. Tells you secrets yet preserves your secrets. Does not forsake you in difficulties nor roughly despises you. The person here in whom these qualities are found is a friend. One desiring a friend should have these qualities. So, I don't recall a whole talk being given about friendship before. At least not since I've been around, and that's been a long time. But there's a gentleman, a Theravadin monk that came to the monastery last weekend, and he gave a talk from his book on social and communal harmony and how to live together. And this person is needing to go. Maybe she can go out the left door. If you can show her. You're missing a great talk. Anyway. We're social animals, and we're utterly dependent upon each other. And depending upon our karma and where and to whom we are born, many of us no longer need to use our more basic instincts of fight or flight to outrun predators, you know, and using all of our strength just to survive till the next meal. But we cannot survive without each other. Who we choose to connect with is also who we become. The Buddha uses a metaphor of rotting fish. He says, if you wrap it in a blade of grass, it eventually makes the grass smelly. Likewise, you would become a thief if you associate with a thief. I had mixed feelings about that, actually. It's not so much associating with a thief, but if your practice is loving kindness and you have an offering to make, and perhaps help that person change that kind of scope, change their scope, and that kind of help them transition out of that particular way of living. I don't know, it could be helpful, but I'm not going to fight with the Buddha right now. When we don't feel connected, there is a lost sense of wholeness, easily leading to depression, the sense of a lack. When we lose touch with someone we count on, that feeling of loss can haunt us. Shame when we are publicly humiliated by something we've done. A sense of being outcast. then the joy that arises again when accepted by those we love and respect being reunited. I read this thing from John O'Donohue. He's this wonderful kind of a Catholic poet. He says, there is a commercial edge of so-called progress that has cut away a huge region of human tissue and webbing that held us in communion with one another. We have fallen out of belonging. A true friend knows the signature of our heartbeat. I love that. I thought that was beautiful and true. Our friendships are primary. And a good way, it seems to me, to work with the different kinds of friendships is to use what we call in Zen, we call it upaya, skillful means. And it's developing time, degree, position, and place. Knowing where we are in relationship to the other. So we use different areas of the heart differently with different relationships. So your family and those you grew up with and perhaps still feel deep roots of knowing. And those who you work with presently, those who you know peripherally. So the degree to which you offer the best parts of yourself to another dictates the time you've spent together. The position you are being met in, a boss, as opposed to someone you knew in your life in the past. In a student-teacher relationship, since it's based on the Dharma, you know, that tends to be more formal. But again, the degrees of that formality depend on whether you are living and working together on a daily basis or whether you see your teacher but a few times a year. You know, I've known Shugen Roshi so long now. And he's my teacher. And there are moments when I'm very respectful and moments when I'm a bit of a wise guy. He does a great thing with me in terms of being a noble friend. When I'm being kind of an asshole, he'll see me and I'm talking to him and I'm doing my thing. And then he just doesn't say anything. He just turns and walks away. It's so powerful. You know, it's so much more powerful than if you say something, you know? It's like just the turning and the leaving, and it's like, right, I'm being a jerk. My very dearest friend I've known for over 30 years now, and she has seen me through many incarnations, and I her, and we deeply know each other's shadows and have remained steadfast in our commitment to sharing a friendship in this life with one another. We're kind of a positive force and a loving presence to each other, a support, and have known each other long enough to challenge who we say we are or how we behave around each other or with others in the world. We can challenge each other and know that we're safe in that challenge, that we won't run from that, from each other. So when I became a monk, she happened to move into the area. The time she was writing, she's a writer, she was writing soap operas, I think. And so I invited her to the monastery to come, and I thought she'd just come and find it interesting and then leave. But she was very, very moved by the practice, and she became a student. She moved down the street. She became friends with the Sangha. And then we had a whole added dimension of speech, the second language that we added to our dynamic, which is the Dharma. So we had a second way of talking to each other and deepening that friendship, which I am so, so grateful for. To have the privilege of a long, close friendship to me hasn't been in making each other better, though I do feel better for it. Indeed, but for becoming a witness and knowing she sees me as I see her, that's the true gift, you know, knowing we have accompanied each other, granted the sight of the essence of the other, to have walked with them and believed in them on this path, no matter the span of time. Now, this Dogen quote comes up for me a lot in all kinds of situations. It's my favorite Dogen because I get it. And And I feel particularly relevant in about friendship. And he says, and I'm going to repeat it, don't you worry, because it has some people like, huh? It's a precipitate fall when the phenomenon in front of one's eyes offers no further passage. It's a precipitate fall when the phenomenon in front of one's eyes offers no further passage. It's like, in other words, falling off a cliff. When what's in front of you, what you're seeing in front of you, offers nothing further, you think. So then all of a sudden you become dead to all that's alive right in front of you because you think you know it. You think you've got it. You know. And it's such a powerful place in the Dharma that you keep awakening. I mean, the Buddha means awake, to be awake. Going to sleep can also mean seeing something and not really seeing it anymore because you think you have it down. You think that you assume that you have everything there is to know about that phenomenon that's in front of your eyes. I found that's been so important for me in this living in this practice. Be careful of your assumptions that you might presume to deserve during that span of time that you've known that you've had this friendship and the depth of the friendship, but be careful. You're keeping awake and doing what is hard to do, not taking anything for granted. Then there are your spiritual friends, your noble friends, those you know and relate to because of your connection with the Dharma. So many people I would not have known or met unless they had entered this particular path. And they're searching in that mind for their own liberation. It's at the heart of the practice that's based in solitude, yet this is a deeply felt connection with those that sit together in silence for long periods of time. It's a whole new relationship that's being developed. You know, sessions, for instance, that they're ending now at the monastery. You know, you're sitting 10, 11, 12, 13 hours a day, 1 week every month, you know, year after year, to continue to settle that mind that wants to constantly talk to itself. That sensibility that we're all doing the same thing together at the same time is very powerful. And all of us being human and having basically the same challenge in becoming still and receptive, becoming spacious and open, not knowing, is a very particular relationship, very particular friendship. The Buddha referred to this as noble friends. So I have some really juicy Pali Canon stories for you. It's like an archaeological dig, you know? It's like the way people used to talk to each other 2,500 years ago. So, Anuruddha, Nandiya, and Kambila are staying together in a quiet forest grove where the Buddha goes to visit them one evening. Can you imagine? Hey Buddha, how are you? You know? Just dropping by informally, you know, hanging out. And he asks whether they got on well with one another. So that's a very simple, direct question. And Anuruddha confirms that he and the other two are living in concord with mutual appreciation, without disputing, blending like milk and water, viewing each other with kindly eyes. This kills me. Yeah? And so the Buddha, who knew that not all his monks got along so cordially, together inquires how they do this. You know, a simple question asking, how is this done? Anuruddha explains that he considers himself fortunate to be living the spiritual life together with such companions as Nandiya and Kambila. To do so is a great gain. The way they live together is an expression of metta, that of loving kindness. Accordingly, he maintains toward the other two a kindly attitude that manifests in kindly deeds, affectionate speech, and loving thoughts. In conclusion, he tells the Buddha, we are different in body, venerable sir, but one in mind. The Buddha expresses pleasure at these words and asks whether they are living diligent, ardent, and resolute. In other words, are they striving for spiritual progress? Anuruddha confirms that they are, and he describes their shared way of life, which seems to be the natural expression of the spirit of harmony and mutual service that they've already mentioned. His description imparts a sense of how their spiritual practice flows from their friendship just as much as their friendship flows from their spiritual practice. Whichever of us returns first from the village with alms, food, prepares the seats, sets out the water for drinking and for washing, and puts the refuse bucket in its place. Whichever of us returns last eats any food left over, if he wished. Otherwise, he throws it away, of course, in our tradition. No throwing away. We'd take the last morsel, but that's what they did then. Where there is no greenery, or drops it into water where there is no life. He puts away the seats and the water for drinking and for washing. He puts away the refuse bucket after washing it, and he sweeps out the refectory. Whoever notices that the pots of water for drinking, washing, or the latrine are low or empty takes care of them. If they are too heavy for him, he calls someone else by a signal of the hand, and they move it by joining hands. But because of this, we do not break out in speech, but every 5 days we sit together all night discussing the Dharma. That is how we abide, diligent, ardent, and resolute. You know, the number of times that I have gone into the kitchen when I've seen there still needs work being done and turned right around and headed up to my room. You know, and it didn't end up making me feel better. When I put my feet up, then I'd lay there going, oh man, I'm such a rotten monk. And yet one does it. I remember Sister Chittister, she's a Catholic monk. She said that sin is doing something that you know is wrong, and yet you do it anyway. And that it feels like that, you know. It's like that. The rest was not a comfort. It was full of, you know, my Jewish guilt and all kinds of stuff. In other words, they just silently serve and help each other. Each attend to whatever needs to be done for the sake of the others, without pausing to calculate whether the distribution of labor is fair, not to check up on whether the others are doing their share. I mean, you know, that's why I turned around. You know, it's not my job. It's not my turn, you know. But here is something very other, you know. They live in constant, kindly attentiveness to one another. To one another's needs, and their kindness goes beyond mere reciprocity. Empathy, compassion, self-reflection, embodied awareness. So in another line, in another chapter, Venerable Ananda approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, sat down to one side and said, Bhante, this is half of the spiritual life. That is good friendship, good companionship, in good comradeship. Not so, Ananda. This is the entire spiritual life. That is good friendship, good companionship, good comradeship. He says that's the whole of the spiritual life. When a monk has a good friend, a good companion, a good comrade, it is to be expected that he will develop and cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. Develops right view, based on seclusion, dispassion, cessation, maturing in release, true letting go. We strive to develop that right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. And of course, each of those is a talk in and of itself. So when a true friend gives what is hard to give and does what is hard to do, to me, is just talking about the release of that constant attitude of self, of letting the self arise and that always being more important than the other. seeing through the ego is such a constant lifetime challenge. What is there besides this arising constantly? At least let the making the other as important as the self would be something that we could strive for. Maturing and release, all about letting go of what we treasure the most. To have a friendship that is sustained through years, I had to see myself through another's eyes, and I've had to learn how to forgive myself and in turn forgive them. Someone to trust your shadow sides. Your difficulties remain in sight with a friend. Someone you can entrust your vulnerabilities, your fear, your anxiety, joy, rapture, all shared, because through time you have learned that your happiness is their happiness and vice versa. After all, what truly is there that separates you, especially when based in forgiveness and tolerance? And I love using the word mercy, because we rarely hear it in this practice. Without the eyes of friendship, you can't endure. And the friendship can't endure without these eyes. And they slip away. They kind of disappear. And we're aware of the loss. We know they're gone, but we rarely know what to do about it. So we've failed to intuit and to see what it is that needs healing in this friendship. You know? Perhaps we haven't taken the time to support our friends' better sides, the larger and more generous sides of their nature. David White is a wonderful poet, talks about how through the natural surprises of a relationship held through the passage of years, we recognize that the greater surprising circles of which we are a part and the faithfulness that leads to a sense of revelation independent of a human relationship. Well, we would say completely dependent on a human relationship. And then spirals out again, leading us to become good friends to our own going, to our own letting go. This practice is all about letting go and how much we continue to cling, clutch, and hold. Li Yong Li, she's so beautiful. If you don't know this poet, you should know him. Li Yong Li is brilliant. He says, he talks about aging and letting go like this. Each day, less leaves. In the tree outside my window, more leave. And every day, more sky, more of the far. And every night, more stars. You know. When Megillah, a monk, has good friends, good companions, good comrades, it can be expected of him that he will be virtuous. One who dwells restrained by the patimokkha, that's the code of monastic rules, that he will get to hear at will, without trouble or difficulty, talk concerned with the austere life that is conducive to opening up the heart. That he will arouse energy for abandoning unwholesome qualities and cultivating wholesome qualities that is not just for the monastic life, that's for life. That he will be wise, possessing the wisdom that discerns arising and passing away. We discern that in every moment of every breath, which is noble and penetrative and leads to the complete destruction of suffering. A friend gives what is hard to give and does what is hard to do. To me, that is also about having conversations that actually bless the spaces that we feel are between us, and therefore make room to have the courage to make those gaps smaller and smaller and smaller. That we walk the walk of this practice. We make it real. That we have had the opportunity, the gift of quietude. Within that silence, there is a commonality. You know, a mutual arising, an understanding that we are all so all in this together, there never has been anything else, arising in this life and departing, a deep knowing that this precious friend is as impermanent as everything else, will one day depart. And this moment that we share together is all we have ever had or will ever truly know. To not waste more time in either our delusions of grandeur or our delusions of self-loathing, but by waking up to the luminous ground that offers unconditional support in every step we take. It holds us when we stop, helps to pick us up after we have fallen this ground. Its foundation is acceptance and has a resilience that can inspire us, just like a true friend. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about the monastery's programs, weekend retreats, and residency, please visit our website at cmm.mro.org.